out faster altogether now. Cooking can be fun. Stir, whip, stir, whip, 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 stir. Stir, whip, stir, whip, 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 stir. Wah! Having fun, having fun.
Well, welcome back and happy life day from all of us at Take Me to Your Reader. I'm Seth.
I'm James. And I'm Colin, with less pause.
Yes. And we had the opportunity, I think is the right word, to see the Star Wars Holiday Special up in Vancouver, Washington at the Kiggins Theater. And that was a couple weeks ago. And Scott Kirkwood, who introduced the movie, mentioned that he was a co-producer on a documentary about the Holiday Special. And so I reached out to see if we could talk to him about the special, about Star Wars, about the documentary as well. And he joins us now. So, Scott, thanks for being here.
Ah, no problem.
Or rather, thanks for letting us come to you.
Our makeshift studio here.
Yes, yes. It is a very cool shrine. I won't ask to take any photos and put them on the website because this kind of thing should be kept secret.
Well, this is the kind of filmmaking that we did with the documentary too. There were many very makeshift moments like this.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Nice. So, yeah, tell our listeners about yourself.
So I'm of the Star Wars generation. I saw it at what I consider to be just the right age. I have to backtrack on that. That's not exactly true. I did not see it at the time when kids usually see the Star Wars movies. Because my parents did not go to movies during that time.
Okay.
We stopped going to movies in 1975, and there was an incident involved, which I'll just tell you briefly. We went to see Bambi at the drive-in theater, because we often did when I was really little. We'd go see Disney movies and cartoons and things. We went to see Bambi. And during the intermission, they played a trailer for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
What? Kids, you're not Bambi?
My mom was so incensed because she really, really, really hated like splatter films, horror movies, and that sort of thing. She was so incensed that they did that, and so angry that she didn't have any control over what they might show, something that. That her kids would see.
Yeah.
So she declared right then and there, we're never going to a movie theater again. And she stuck by that all the way until I was in late high school.
Okay.
So because of that, I was a huge Star Wars fan. And by all accounts, at one point I was the biggest Star Wars fan in my school, but I had never seen the movie.
Oh, wow.
I read the novel. I read the comic books. I had trading cards. I had toys. All of that, because I was hugely into it, but I did not see it until much, much later.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And so you didn't even see Empire in the theater?
I did not. Okay. The most I saw of Empire was a tiny little bit of it from just outside of a drive-in theater as we drove by it.
And so what hooked you?
Reading the novel, I guess. I'll give you a little bit more backstory. I was, pre-Star Wars, there wasn't Star Wars, and so there was Star Trek,
right.
And that was the big sci-fi thing, and I was hugely into Star Trek. I loved Star Trek, and we also, though I have to say, we got rid of our TV as well around the same time. but I used to watch Star Trek up to that point, so I was familiar with Star Trek. And Star Wars came along. I actually kind of scoffed at it. I said, "Oh, Star Wars, Star Trek. Can't they be more original? It's just another ripoff of, of Star Trek."
You sound like him,
right?
Poor guy.
And so I refused to get into Star Wars when it was, becoming huge, when the hype was building up. And then I started to realize, oh, this is not, like Star Trek at all. I started seeing pictures from it. And so I decided, my uncle had the novel before the movie came out. I decided to read it. And I read that novel and it was fantastic. I loved it. And it instantly, I was hugely into it.
I didn't realize that the novel or novelization kind of came out before the movie did until I watched the documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, it says it's written by George Lucas, but it's actually written by Alan Dean Foster, who I was already reading because he wrote the Star Trek logs and, many other sci-fi things from around that time. And I had read a lot of his stuff, and I read that novel. And of course I didn't know it was Alan Dean Foster, but it tracked that, I would like that as well because I really did like his style. So, I read that. I got a set of the the trading cards, I was off. You know, that was it. That started it for me.
Interesting. Okay. And then the holiday special came on television while you still had it?
Right. So 1978, November 1978, of course, Star Wars had not played on TV at all, so people hadn't seen it there. This was the first thing of Star Wars, really, to be on TV, besides, yeah. I think, the making of, and there was the Donnie and Marie, Star Wars skit.
It was the Don Marie show, right? So was that was before...
It was. And there was also Bob Hope Christmas special that had a Star Wars skit in it and Mark Hamill. So some other little things like that, but nothing really directly Star Wars had been on TV. And so
cameos or something, which I'd come across a long time ago on YouTube.
It's kind of amazing. I mean, it's, you can hear about how bad the Star Wars Holiday Special is, and there actually is worse things out there. there really is. Especially in other countries. There's some amazingly bad Star Wars content that showed on TV in the early days. But so this was Star Wars Holiday Special was advertised in the newspaper, and I remember seeing the ad in the newspaper and getting really excited about it. My brother and I, were really excited about that. And we did occasionally get to see things on TV. We would go to my grandparents' house and we'd watch it on the big console TV down in the basement. Mm. And, sometimes we'd see movies, sometimes we'd see TV shows or whatever if we happened to be over there. And we went over there quite a bit. And I think my dad, I know he saw the ad as well, and he was curious about Star Wars. He was a sci-fi guy. I mean, he read a lot of sci-fi, Philip K. Dick and Heinlein and, things like that. But I think he made it happen. I think he made sure that we wound up at my grandparents' house the evening that played. And there we were, and we caught the whole thing. And of course I was over the moon because this was the first chance I had to see actually my screen heroes on the screen, playing their characters in their actual outfits. Mm. And, so this was great. My little brother and I, we were just transfixed on the TV. Yeah. Of course my dad, I remember he probably stayed in the room for about 10 minutes and then he was through. He was done. That was enough for him.
That is a logical point to tap out.
And it's a shame because that gave him a really, wrong idea of Star Wars. Cause it was, not really what Star Wars was like.
Yeah.
Especially in the very beginning of it. So, but we watched it and we loved it. There were, we were a little bit let down by the fact that there was only, kind of brief cameos by the main characters in there and a whole lot of other stuff that we didn't really understand why it was in there, it really had to do with Star Wars, but just the whole thing. And also the idea that it was a, kind of a picture of life at home in the Star Wars universe, something you would not see in the movies. This sort of quiet, home time in the Wookiee household and what they did on a day-to-day basis and also what the kids did, the Wookiee children or whatever. And so that was fantastic. And I remember we laughed a lot about that afterwards in some particular scenes that we remembered. And we played we kind of recreated some of that stuff too, a little bit.
Nice.
But the interesting thing was that I remember vividly after seeing it, I went to school, after it had shown, and I talked to kids at school about it, and everybody was excited and they seen this new character, Boba Fett, in the cartoon. And that was exciting. And then after that, it just kind of went away. Like no one talked about it anymore after that. And I remember years later, I would ask people, same people I know had seen it. And I'd say, hey, do you remember that, that holiday special, the Star Wars holiday special? What? No, I don't remember that. What are you talking about?
And the Men in Black had visited them.
Right. That's what it felt like. But I knew I had seen it. And I was like, it can't be a dream, can it? But I couldn't find any evidence of it. Yeah, and so it was kind of like, well, maybe I am making this up, or maybe it was a dream or something. And
did they ever put you underneath this hairdryer looking thing?
The mind evaporator. Yeah. Maybe that's what happened.
You know, I have a similar thing with me, and sorry to kind of interrupt you there. But
no problem.
And I, because I want to hear a little bit from Colin and James. James, it was your first time seeing it, right?
In its entirety, yes.
Okay, okay. And Colin, you had seen it on television originally?
We saw it on television, yeah. Okay. But the only thing I remember about it is being profoundly disappointed.
Okay.
It's like, oh yes, I saw that.
So it came out right after I turned six. And I remember it being on television, and I remember that we had been excited to watch it. That's all I remember, other than I had these vague thoughts that, like, I remember there was something in Star Wars where they were on the Wookiee home planet. And yep. I couldn't, for years, right. I couldn't remember what it was. And then in college, I think at some point, somebody had one of the bootleg copies and put it on. And it started with the Wookiee part, and I was like, nope. Because there's no subtitles. And I went, well, this copy's wrong. It doesn't have subtitles. You know, so
that's what happened to me. When I came across it, and the copy I found was really, really terrible.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That doesn't help.
Yeah. When I started trying, I got about, like your dad, 10 minutes into it. And I was like, okay, I'm done. This is dumb.
I mean, literally, the as the documentary points out, there's 11 minutes before you even get, you know, past the Wookiee dialogue. So there's nothing but Wookiee dialogue. So it's tough to get through. But, you know, as a kid... I don't remember that bothering us. Mm-hmm. I just remember, you know, I didn't have a problem with it. I knew I could tell from their kind of expressions or the way that they were moving their arms or whatever and what they did that I knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. So it didn't bother me that they didn't have, you know, subtitles or whatever. And I knew that, you know, that was how Chewbacca was. So,
yeah.
So that wasn't much of a problem for me.
Yeah. So I do want to talk, I want to get to talking about the documentary, but first let's continue kind of talking about the special a little bit, just since, you know, it's fresh for us.
Right.
And I guess I will say for listeners, like if you've seen the holiday special and you feel that you need some therapy to get your equilibrium back, I will say that A Disturbance in the Force is an excellent way to do that because it kind of explains the who's and the whys and the hows of it.
I would not be, I would say, you know, patting myself or even the other filmmakers on the back by saying that it is better than the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes.
It's a much easier watch.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, the thing that I love about I don't want to start talking about the documentary yet because I want to still talk about some of the just, the thing is with the Holiday Special is, it's baffling, right? Like you said, like watching
there's
it,
you're
like,
a lot of WTF moments.
There is, yeah. You're like, what is going on here, and what are they doing? And
why is Jefferson's starship here?
Right. Exactly, and you do.
What
find
is
out,
Diane Carroll doing? Right, you know, right, here. Right. What is she singing? Why is she singing to a Wookiee?
Oh, I was surprised by B. Arthur. I'm like, Golden Girl. What?
Oh yeah, yeah. I was quite familiar with B. Arthur at the time. I was not into sitcoms, mm-hmm. and so I was kind of annoyed by them. And so when B. Arthur showed up, I was kind of like, you know. But then I wound up liking that scene because it was the cantina, and you got to see all the cantina creatures.
Yeah.
You know, and at that point, a lot of people don't know this, but at that point in time, November 1978, the cantina had been largely kind of kept under wraps, even though people had seen it in the theaters. There were very, very few pictures of the cantina creatures and any of the cantina. The trading cards had held back the cantina scenes. It wasn't until the Orange series came out later that they really showed a lot of that kind of stuff. They were really holding back, you know, all of the material that was related to Star Wars did not really show the cantina stuff, and that really happened kind of later after the action figures started coming out. And then, you know, then there's like a flood of material around the cantina creatures.
And that is one of the crazy things about Star Wars. And I feel like we're going to end up treading on some of the ground that's covered in the documentary, just by nature of talking about it, is that the marketing machine that is Star Wars now, you know, did not exist. And,
right.
and it didn't really exist for movies because there weren't movie sequels for one thing. And there was no home video, right? So there was no further life for a movie after it was out of the theater until maybe it had a television premiere. But Star Wars, I don't think premiered on television until after Return of the Jedi came out.
Right. I think it was, what, 1984 when it was the first time it showed?
Yeah. I mean, if somebody had a bootleg copy of this, it's because they pointed their home reel-to-reel recorder at the television.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking before VCRs and laser discs and any commercial home recording equipment.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
You could get sections of it in 16 millimeter and 8 millimeter film and show those, you know, on your wall or whatever at home. That's about as close as you could get. And they were usually silent.
Yes.
Although there were, I think, a few 16 millimeter copies that did have sound.
You could watch still pictures in your viewfinder.
Right. Yeah. I had one of those and that was amazing.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. And even how far the toys lagged behind the movie was really interesting. And it reminds me of Spaceballs, of course. Merchandising, right?
Right.
Yeah, they weren't there yet. And we talked about this one a long time ago when we did an episode talking about our favorite Expanded Universe stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the idea of how do you keep the flame of Star Wars alive, right? And Timothy Zahn did a lot to do that, right? And here, just how did the holiday special come to be a thing, you know, it inherited kind of a history of the variety show that was kind of popular on television.
On TV.
Yeah. And why did we watch it? Because it was on TV and you had three channels if you were lucky, you know?
Yeah. And I think part of the problem was that people's expectations were so high with Star Wars, you know, because it just blew everything else out of the water completely. Yeah. And there's absolutely no way you could recapture that on television, especially with the kind of television budgets and this and the kind of effects they had available to television and that sort of thing. There was no chance you could even remotely capture, you know, that. And so I think people were expecting that, particularly adults at the time were expecting there'd be a little bit of that. And other than some recycled clips from the movie, there really wasn't. And the effects that they did have were kind of standard, you know, chroma key television effects that, you know, you usually see in a low budget TV show.
Yeah. Do you have any idea what the budget was for that holiday special?
Oh, off the top of my head, I don't know.
They said $8 million in the documentary.
Yeah.
It may be. Yeah. Okay. I've forgotten what the number was, but how that equates to television, I don't really know for sure. I mean, undoubtedly a much bigger budget than you would normally get for a variety show.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of things in it that you wouldn't even be trying to do on a variety show.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was quite a bit of effort and work put into it. A lot of really talented people that worked on it and did some amazing things. But unfortunately that was really overshadowed by, you know, how disappointing it was as a whole. And so, you know, that kind of got, you know, overlooked and forgotten about. But there really are some incredible things that were done and great moments in there that just kind of get lost.
Yeah.
Because you're so shocked at how the rest of it is.
Yeah. There's a mystique about the holiday special, and the documentary differently covers this about like this is fan cred, right? I saw the holiday special, you know, despite what it is. And, you know, people want to see it and want to watch it over and over. And it's a little mystifying, I think, but how many, have you seen it many, many times?
You're going to have to believe me when I tell you that the number of times I've seen it cannot be counted. I'm almost certain that I've seen it more than any other human on the planet. And that's not really an empty statement there. I kind of had to do a lot of the research and so forth that I was doing on it. So, a little more background here. What happened after I saw the holiday special, and I told you that years later I talked to people and they didn't remember it exists. I couldn't find a single person who even recalled it, you know, and I began to even doubt myself. Mm-hmm. But I found a Starlog magazine article that had pictures from it and a little, you know, bit of information about it. And so I was like, okay, I know this happened. And from that point, I was kind of like, I'm going to try to collect anything that I can that's related to that. Anything that mentions the holiday special, or any photos, any information, reviews, whatever I can find, anything that relates to the holiday special, I'm going to try to, you know, collect that together and use that as research, you know, because I had to prove that it actually happened. I had to prove that it existed because we throughout the rest of the 80s and on into the 90s, it was not available. I mean, I know that some people did record it, and videotapes eventually did surface. But I can tell you, I was looking constantly. I was going to, you know, conventions, sci-fi conventions. I was looking at the bootleg tapes and so forth. I could not find that tape. And I think it really started to surface somewhere around 93, 94.
Okay.
That's when most people have said they saw their first copy of it. That's when it kind of started to get widespread.
Yeah, that's so that's right for me.
Yeah, 94 is when I picked it up on VHS, and I walked into my favorite record store, and where, you know, I normally just go record shopping, but I also usually look at their videotapes, and they had, you know, they always had great, like, you know, sort of bootleg tapes and things like that, that you couldn't find in the regular market. And one day I walked in and I looked on the shelf, and right there was a copy of the Star Wars Holiday Special. And I absolutely flipped my lid. I grabbed it and I rented it because they were available to rent. And I rented it and I took it home and I copied it. And immediately the first thing I wanted to do was call my friends and get them to come over and watch it. Mm-hmm. And so we did, and I don't think they've ever forgiven me since that time. But I was so vindicated, because here it was at last. And again, it was a terrible, terrible copy. It was, you know, it had turned, it was, I don't know how many generations down the road from the original tape. It was all washed out. Oh, it was, it had ghost images, and it was basically orange, you know, the color had turned orange, and it looked absolutely terrible. And the sound was muddy and so forth, but, it was there. And I actually got to see it again. And I realized how bad it actually was. And I was like, okay, well, it wasn't great, but I kind of expected that. Maybe I didn't expect it to be quite that bad, but yeah, that sort of makes sense. You know, when you see it as a kid, it's, mm-hmm. you're a lot more inclined to accept it, especially if it's your first time seeing, you know, Star Wars characters on screen.
Yeah.
So
that was the impression I got from everybody who criticized it in the documentary. Everybody who watched it as a kid, like, loved it. Everybody who watched it after that was like,
yeah,
this is total blah.
There's something to be said for that. I mean, I think we all have stuff like that where we saw it as a kid. And as an adult, if we look at it like and truly tell ourselves the truth, it's like, okay, that was crap. Mm-hmm. But I saw it as a kid, and I loved it because there wasn't very much sci-fi available at the time. Right. And I watched what there was, and I got into it, and I enjoyed it then. And it's now it's got that nostalgia flavor, and it's, you know, it kind of brings you back to that period in your life. And I think that, you know, the same thing, you know, has happened with people who did see the Holiday Special when it aired.
Well, and there was an additional kind of illicitness of it, right? Almost like when they started labeling rap albums and stuff with explicit lyrics, all of a sudden those become, you know, coin, right? Like this is something I want.
I mean, this was the forbidden holy grail of video material, you know, related to Star Wars. You know, in the 90s, that stuff kind of started to surface. You know, you would see a lot of the you know, TV specials and things would start showing up on videotape, and lots of other material related to Star Wars that people taped long ago would start, you know, being passed around on videotape compilations. But this was the king of them all. This was the thing that, you know, people just didn't have. And so when you got a hold of it, you really had something, mm-hmm. you know, amazing on your hands. Even mm-hmm. if it was terrible, it was amazing to have.
I love the moment in the white and nerdy video when Al Yankovic is seen in his supreme white and nerdiness doing a back alley transaction for it. Yeah.
The brown bag, you know, paper bag.
Well, and how thrilled he looks too. That's the greatest part. So,
I guess in the 90s, once it started, you know, more people started getting their hands on the videotape, word started getting around. And then eventually the internet happened,
mm-hmm.
and people started talking about it on the internet, And then when websites started popping up, there would be, you know, little corners of websites that would talk about the website, the Star Wars Holiday Special, and how horrible it was, and and everybody would kind of say the same thing about, oh, it's so terrible, don't ever see it, and you know, it's, you know, you'll regret it, it's so bad, it's not good, and
which of course makes you want to go watch it,
right? It makes you want to see it more, but I kind of at some point I was like, well, you know, I see these websites and they all seem to be repeating the same stuff. They're sort of copying what the other websites said and they don't really have anything original to say about it. Mm-hmm. And I really want to make a website that, you know, doesn't do that, that actually looks at it objectively and tries to present it, you know, present it factually, like here's, you know, all the photos that we've managed to cobble together all these years. Here's behind the scenes stuff. Here's stuff about, you know, here's a whole list of all the actors that were in it and the parts they played. And here's all this information that you're not going to be able to find.
Yeah.
And so I had made, I think it was 1998, I made my first Star Wars website, and it was based on the Star Wars deleted scenes. Mm. I was really passionate about, you know, seeing those deleted scenes get released somehow. And it took them a long time before they finally did.
Yeah.
We didn't think it was ever going to happen. But I did the same thing with that. You know, it was another obscurity where I collected as many photos that I could and put that all together and made a website to try and reconstruct as much of those scenes as I could.
Did you have the original Jabba scene with the big chubby guy?
Yes. I did have, let's see, I had photos from that, and I even had some short video clips. I mean, the video in 1998 was pretty, pretty dismal, but it still was really great to see that stuff. And I remember shortly after that, the Biggs scenes were shown, the deleted Biggs scenes on Tatooine were shown publicly at a convention, for the first time ever, since it had been cut from the film. And somebody, had managed to record that with a handheld camcorder.
Yeah.
And I got a hold of that clip and was able to, for the first time, see those, because I couldn't be at the convention. I was really, really bummed that I couldn't. Mm. And I managed to get a hold of that, tiny, postage stamp size video, you know, but I watched it and I saw those scenes and it was the most amazing thing ever. You know, it was like when I first saw the Star Wars Holiday Special. It was like, yes, they do exist. I can prove that they existed.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, I had been thinking for a while about doing something about the Holiday Special, and because I had a lot of stuff collected and articles and photos and whatnot. And so it was a few years later, it was in 2003 that I finally started Star Wars Holiday Special.com. And the thing that really incentivized me there was I had picked up on eBay the script for the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, wow.
Which no one had that I knew of. And, you know, apart from like the Lucasfilm archives or whatever. And I managed to get this script, and it revealed a lot of things in the script that were totally unknown, you know, like that people now take for granted because it's common knowledge. But for instance, the creature that sings to Itchy in the Holiday Special, she's not named. Diane Carroll's character is not named, but we know now that that creature is Mermia, but that came from the script.
Okay.
Because she is actually named in the script. Okay. Also the creature who, or the android that, teaches Lumpy how to build the transmitter.
Well, glitching.
What do we call him? There's no name given for
Harvey Korman. We call him Harvey Korman.
Right. Yeah. And, in the script I found out, that character is called Dromboid.
Okay.
So I put that up on my website now everybody knows that it's that, but they only know it's that because it was in the script. And I was like, I have to reveal this. I have to put this out there because, this is fantastic information and it needs to be shared.
Star WikiLeaks.
Yeah. And there was a whole lot more information like that in there. But getting back to how many times I had seen the Holiday Special, one of the first things I had to do when I created that website was one of my goals was to present a complete like cast list, a complete list of the cast and characters that they played. Because when you watch the credits to the Star Wars Holiday Special, you just get a bunch of names. And it's not even a complete list, but you get a bunch of names. It doesn't say, for the most part, what characters they played.
Oh, okay.
And that was the trick right there. I wanted to figure out who played all those characters. What do those names correspond to? Because they were meaningless names to me.
Yeah.
I looked at them. I'm like, you know, well, who's Lev Mailer? Like, what did he play? Did he play one of the Cantina creatures, or did he play, you know, a stormtrooper or something else? Right. I didn't know. So I had to go through and basically watch the special, you know, over and over again to kind of, you know, look at the faces. And then at the time I was living in Houston, and I rented, there was this amazing video store that had videotapes going back to the dawn of videotape. They had like every videotape ever, from the most obscure exercise video to the most obscure Shakespearean production, you know, featuring, you know, a few famous names or whatever. And so I would go online on, you know, early IMDb, and I would find, okay, so what other things was Lev Mailer in, or whatever, what other things was, you know, this person in? And then I had to go and rent, you know, I'd go to that videotape store, and I would rent a videotape of something that had that person in it. And then I would watch it. And when they'd come up on the screen, I'd be like, ah, there they are. And that's the guy that played the mustached Imperial officer in, you know, and so it was that kind of thing. And that's how I managed to fill out that list by watching other things.
And that worked even through the costuming and the makeup and the grainy VHS and everything else?
By that point, I had a much better copy. Okay. And it was not, you know, it's we were about halfway to where we are now in terms of quality, but the improvement was, you know, exponential. And so I could pick out a lot of the details that I previously couldn't. So it was a matter of matching faces to names, basically, and being like, okay, that's the actor that played this character. There was a problem with any masked characters, of course. You've got no face to go on. And right. So
who were the Wookiees?
That took a lot longer. And at this, even up to today, we don't know the majority of the Cantina creatures who played them.
Okay.
We know one or two people that have come forward and
it was me.
It was me. I did it.
there was an amnesty announced for all of them.
Right. so that, you know, that's still a mystery. Like, who played the rest of them? You know, we have no idea, and we probably never will. Any records that were kept, if there were any, are long gone.
Yeah.
You know, any behind the scenes material is long gone. It will probably remain a mystery for all time. But I was able to get the complete cast list and eventually put that up on the website, and along with all the other facts that I'd gathered from the script, I was able to put some sections for each of those things. And then in 2003, I put the website up, and it went live, and immediately got a lot of attention, and I was very, very happy with it. It turned out extremely well. I found a web designer who was willing to help out on it, and she did the initial design of the site, which you can still see. There's still a link to the old version of the site where material is. And, it's dated. The design is dated by today's standards for sure. It's, you know, it doesn't look as good on a huge screen as it did back then, but it's fantastic. You know, looks wise, it matches exactly what I had in mind, kind of that 70s brown, wood grain kind of look.
I haven't gone to the website, so I'm definitely going to have to do that. I can't believe it.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff from, you know, back in the history of the site there.
Nice.
There's a lot of things to be found. And a copy of the script, too. You can get this, you can download the script in PDF.
Oh, fun. So, Colin and James, I mean, James, you've now seen this holiday special one time, right? You know, well,
this is where we get your unique perspective.
There was plenty of shots in there that I think made it better than the holiday special. So.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say I took plenty of shots before the movie, but I know they didn't sell anything hard at the Higgins Theater. But what did you think? of the experience.
It wasn't the worst thing I've seen.
Right.
That's yeah. Still, I think
it's better than the Rollerball remake.
Oh, yeah. I actually own a copy of that. Somebody got. I'm a big fan of the original Rollerball.
Okay.
And somebody got me a copy of the remake, and it's just abysmally bad.
It's really bad.
It's terrible. Yeah. But I kind of keep it. I have it on DVD. I kind of keep it just for the sake of completion, I guess.
Yeah.
And just to reference it, and like, yeah, here's that thing. That, yeah. You know, it was so bad.
What did you think on rewatch, Colin?
Oh my God. Well, there'd been a slight number of years between it's a lot different being a kid. One thing about the variety aspect I want to talk about is that if you watch Sesame Street or The Electric Company, you essentially had a variety show in your house every day. That was all, you know, entertainment and educational based. And so I think we were almost primed.
Yeah, I think we forget that you know, this was just, it was in a format that is completely foreign to us now, but it's something that we were very much used to at the time. And so it didn't shock us the way it did, you know, the way it does now when we watch it. It back then it was just kind of how things were done.
Yeah. Where it's like a, you know, 90 minutes where 80 minutes are us watching something that somebody else is watching.
Right. On the screen. That kind of thing.
Yeah. It's almost like going to a movie now because television and streaming is so fragmented across all of the different services and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you missed it, the thing, you knew that everyone else at the playground or your office would be talking about it the next day.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the popular things all got watched. The non-popular things got watched by the people that wanted to have that because that was their niche.
Yeah.
And I think the special probably fell into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, seeing it, for the first time since I was six, at least most of it, seeing the still images of the Wookiee planet, you know, of the tree, essentially, I was like, this is what, okay, I remember this, you know, and I think I had gotten it mixed up with like the animated Tarzan series when I was a kid in my head.
Oh, interesting.
Because I had like the Weeble Wobble Tarzan house.
Oh my gosh.
but yeah, so there were a couple things where I was like, that's okay. I remember this image and I remembered the dude pouring the drink into his head, which another Harvey Korman role. Yes. But yeah, that was like, oh, he's going to pour the drink into his head. And so it's just like random things that I remember.
I think taken in bits and pieces, I think it was pretty good. Like parts of it, like the holographic dancing, all those skits I thought were really cool.
Uh-huh. And
to me, thinking, you know, 7 years ago now, I guess.
Yeah.
To me, that seems like it might have been pretty good effects for the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And little bits seemed okay, but when you put it all together, it's not something that does come together well.
Right.
Because it's so fragmented.
Yeah. And it tries to, you know, so to anybody who hasn't actually seen the holiday special, you know, there is a through line, right? A framing narrative of Han trying to get Chewie back to his home world for Life Day, right? Yeah.
There's about 5 minutes worth of plot stretched out over 2 hours.
Yeah, so. Very much. Yeah.
Very, very.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess the other thing it does is it talks a little bit about the effect of the Empire on home life, right? There was
no
privacy. You were constantly under the threat of intimidation and abuse and other kinds of things.
People. Yeah, I think this is great. Like this is something that you don't really get from the movies so much. It's implied that it's there, but you don't see it. And you might have even seen more of it. That, you know, the big scenes that I was talking about, Biggs on Tatooine, showed a little more of that home life kind of thing, and the effects of the Empire. You know, because they're talking about how the Empire is encroaching on, you know, even places like Tatooine and. You know, but that got cut out because it slowed down the pace of the movie, and, you know, rightfully so. But it's really great to watch it now because it gives you so much more flavor to the film and the whole universe as well. And that's kind of what the holiday special was. It added a little bit more flavor to, you know, the what you got in the movies, and in a way that they couldn't do in the movies because, you know, none of this would have flown. It would have all been cut. You know, if they'd had stuff like this,
people would have waited. 10 minutes to walk out that would have waited for.
Yeah.
Right.
So I want to talk about the Kagan's Theater connection and that kind of stuff, if you know any of the history there. But because it really is, like, if you're going to watch this, don't just go to YouTube and watch the holiday special. Watch it in a room full of other people who are going to be, you know, reacting to it.
I highly recommend that. It's, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, nobody's going to argue, I don't think. I mean, well, a few might, that the Rocky Horror Picture Show is a cinematic masterpiece. Mm-hmm. That's not what it's for. You know, that's not the reason we have continuous repeated screenings of it, midnight showings where, you know, tons of people show up and mm-hmm. they participate in it and so forth. It's become a phenomenon. And that's kind of, I think, where we're at with the Star Wars Holiday Special now. It is, you know, it's gone from something that was, you know, really shunned for a long time, mm-hmm. and now it's become more of a you know, as you've seen at the Kins Theater, it's a phenomenon. People come to it, yeah. and they know that it's not mm-hmm. you know, good, but it's right. but it's still it's fun, and that's really what
yeah.
that's what they're there for, is the fun, because there's all kinds of other things going on. We got people in costume, you know, we've got people participating, cheering, you know, right. the good guys booing the villains on the mm-hmm. screen and laughing at the, you know, the stuff yeah. that's just unintentionally hilarious.
Yeah, you haven't lived until you've been in a theater full of people all saying stir whip stir whip, right. whip whip stir.
Yeah, and that was kind of something I kind of wanted to see. I kind of wanted, you know, after the first maybe a couple of times of showing this at the Kiggins Theater, it sort of occurred to me that this could become kind of like a midnight movie phenomenon, you mm-hmm. know, where we, you know, people would participate and they'd get really into, you know, this sort of audience energy, you know, that, yeah. that you would get from having all these fans there at once. And it's not it becomes not about the actual holiday special mm-hmm. anymore so much. It's yeah. it's that's what brings everybody in, but it's really just it's it becomes an event, you know. Yeah. I think that's really fun, and I really want to encourage that more.
And how long has it been going on?
We started it in 2013. Okay. And we skipped 2020 during mm-hmm. the pandemic, of course. But we've done it every year since then. We've done more than one showing. We did like an early showing to see if we could get more kids in the early part of the day, and then a later showing more for the adults. And we've done a few variations on it as well. We did we did it with the Riff Tracks commentary at one time. We've showed it with some other short features before, you know. Most recently we did the Richard Pryor Star Wars bar sketch, nice. which is, you know, it ties in very well to mm-hmm. the Harley special, the whole cantina scene with Richard Pryor. So we showed that before it, maybe a year or two ago. Yeah. And
have you done it with the commercials?
We have done it with the commercials. Oh,
that's
yeah.
What I, that's
yeah.
what I want.
Right. Yeah. We do that from time to time.
That would be cool.
It having shown it with the commercials and without, I have to say it, my preference is without the commercials, because I think I think you absorb it a little better that way.
Okay.
The commercials, I mean, it literally does drag it out to 2 full hours right. with the commercials. Right, yeah. Yeah. Whereas without the commercials, it's only 90 minutes, and yeah. that's a little easier to take.
Yeah. So I think the commercials would appeal to just like people of our age who yeah. remember those commercials.
I just thought seeing right. the 70s commercials would be fun.
Right. It is really fun to show it with, I mean, because the commercials are great. You know, maybe showing the commercials first, you know, beforehand and just showing them in a big group mm-hmm. and then showing the special we might try that sometime.
Right.
That's a tough one because those commercials are amazing.
Does anybody have the tapes for the Ewok adventure and the Ewoks battle for Endor?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think some of those are on Disney.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, in fact, the okay. cartoon from the variety show is on Disney.
Oh, the Boba Fett.
The Boba Fett cartoon, yeah.
Yes, the only piece of the Star Wars Holiday Special that has actually made it out publicly that Disney has put out is that, you know, 10 or 11 minute chunk, the cartoon with Boba Fett in it, the faithful yeah. Wookiee. Yeah. And I was really, really happy when they did that. I was like, oh, you know, finally, we're almost there. You know, maybe at some point we'll finally reach the point where maybe the 50th anniversary of the Star Wars Holiday Special in, what would it be, 2028?
Yeah, 3 years.
So after they've had the 50th anniversary of Star Wars, maybe the next year, maybe it would be the time to put the yeah. holiday special out in its yeah. entirety on Disney Plus. I don't know. I'd love to see it. Yeah. I think, you know, but there's not any reason not to. I mean, you just put it out there. You know, people will watch it if they want to watch it, and then they won't if they don't want to.
Probably do better than Morbius. So,
you know, one of the things we do, because we talk about adaptations on our podcast all the time, mm-hmm. we're comparing source material versus adaptations. And if the adaptation falls flat, one of the things we talk about is what we would do to make it better. And that's one of the questions I came up with.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe instead of only rebroadcasting the special, you do it again.
Hmm.
And then I wonder, who,
as
what
in create
would you,
a new,
they did. It's a called new Lego Holiday Special.
No. I mean, I don't know.
Well, if you know, there
a
was
variety show would work today, but
there was talk about that. And you know how serious it really was is anybody's guess. But when let's see, when Jon Favreau was doing The Mandalorian, he actually was talking very seriously sounding about doing a new holiday special, a new Star Wars holiday special. Mm. And, you know, I mean, that guy, he loves the Star Wars holiday special.
Yeah.
And you can see it. It's in The Mandalorian. You've got the forked weapon.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got the reference to Life Day right off the bat. There's other little bits and pieces here and there. And of course, it's not The Mandalorian, but in Skeleton Crew, you've got that whole sequence of the holographic dancers recreated from the holiday special, and that's amazing to see.
I'm gonna have to go rewatch that.
Yeah,
I didn't even pick up on that.
Yep, they researched that pretty heavily, and they couldn't use the original footage. You know, it wasn't in high enough quality, but they recreated it as faithfully as they possibly could, and had that be the children's entertainment, you know, which was exactly what it should have been.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty amazing.
Yeah. So were you involved in starting to screen the holiday special at Kagan's?
Yes. So I had gone to the Kagan's for some other events and had seen the theater. I really fell in love with the theater.
That's great.
It's a beautiful theater, well-maintained. And, you know, the owner, Dan, he was friends with friends of mine. I got introduced and, you know, I liked Dan right off the bat and we hit it off. And I, you know, like I said, I'd gone to some events there and I started thinking, well, you know, this would be an amazing place to show the Star Wars Holiday Special because I'd kind of been looking to do that. And so, you know, and I was kind of looking to do it in Portland. And it just happened that Vancouver was, you know, came first. That was the first thing
Portland
that came up. And yeah, Portland adjacent. Yes, no problem for people from Portland to go across the river and see stuff there. And mm-hmm. and it was just it was such a great theater. And it was also I knew I had Dan's full support with it, and I have all along. So. And I knew that it was going to be, it wasn't going to be something where they do it once or twice and then they just kind of turn their back on it and say, right. Oh, you know, that's fine. We're not going to do it anymore. Dan was excited about doing it every year. And so was I. So we started, the first year in 2013 and, it was a success and, we continued from there. I think, it's a 300 seat theater. And I think the first time we showed it, I know we had over 100 people in the theater, which was, you know, unheard of. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, wow, 100 people came to see the Star Wars Holiday Special. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And we seemed to get more, you know, each time, until we were up, you know, around 200 and a little over. And this last time, you know, I did a little bit more promotion, on Instagram and I think, there was a little bit more, maybe word of mouth going around too. And we, every seat this time was accounted for.
Yeah.
And Dan had some spillover seats, you know, as well, you know, like a certain number of seats he reserved for, you know, people that didn't wind up showing up or, you know, or whatever. Cause we figured out, you know, not everybody who reserves their seat is going to actually come.
Right.
And so there should be a few extra and
should Brett Carl.
Yeah. I reserved the last four seats.
Oh.
And so I thought, oh, that's it. Because, you know, Kathy asked about it. And then, mm-hmm. and then you mentioned Carl wanted to come.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, all of the extra seats, the spillover seats, those were all accounted for as well.
Yeah. Wow.
So we were, at some point, I was talking to Dan about it. And I was like, well, what are you going to do, Dan? And he's like, well, you know, we'll bring folding chairs in if we have to. Because we can actually fit more. We can fit more people in the theater legally.
Under the fire
code. Under the fire code. We can actually fit more than the 300 seats we have. Wow. So if we have to, we'll bring in folding chairs and we'll have people sitting, you know, in the aisles or whatever. And that didn't actually have to happen, but this theater was pretty full, and that was great to see. I hope that it continues like that.
So with Star Wars in the name of your website, is that tricky in terms of naming rights and that kind of stuff?
That's an interesting topic right there, because when I founded the website, I knew that by calling it StarWarsHolidaySpecial.com, I was definitely using IP there, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, they could, if they wanted to, they could easily shut me down. And, you know, I would be happy to just hand the domain over to them. It's like, you know, sorry, you know, you can have it. I don't mean to tread on your toes and so forth. So I had a backup domain reserved just in case that happened. I had a backup domain ready to go. And luckily, you know, that didn't use the word Star Wars in it. And luckily I didn't have to do that. They overlooked it. And I started thinking about it. I was like, well, you know, in order to actually claim that name, they'd have to actually admit that they owned it
and legitimize
it. Yeah. And it would legitimize it in a way that they weren't really doing at that time. So I thought I'm in a pretty good position here. Mm-hmm. But over the years, I've learned that Lucasfilm is definitely aware of the website and all the work that I've done there, and I've been pleased to find out that they actually consult my website when they have something that they're trying to trying to find out that isn't in their records.
Wow.
While a few things from the Star Wars Holiday Special wound up going to the Lucasfilm archives, there's a ton of information that was never handed over or never recorded or just lost, you know, over time. And most of that was in, you know, CBS's possession, because they were the ones responsible for making
this. The broadcast partner.
Right? Yeah. The broadcast partner. And so, a lot of that just got lost, and Lucasfilm didn't have it. And so it really was a point where, you know, when I put that website up and I had all of that information that I had gathered from all these various sources, they have occasionally gone there to find out things that they don't have in their records.
That's
so fun. And that really made me feel good about what I was doing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's also part of the reason why they allow it to continue, because I've never made any money off it. I've never monetized it in any way, and I've always been careful also to stay on the right side of Lucasfilm. I've always kept it family friendly, and I don't, you know, I also don't explicitly reference, you know, bootlegs or anything like that. Or, you know, I keep it, basically the idea when I made the site was I'm going to make this site as if I was doing this for Lucasfilm themselves. And that was the idea behind it. It was like, I want this site to be like what a website about the Holiday Special would be if Lucasfilm had created it, or if I was doing it for them. And that's remained, you know, that the same way to this day.
Almost an academic sense, which is generally accepted for violation of IP rights.
Yeah, it really was. That was like really the core of it. The whole purpose behind the site was an academic purpose to, you know, to research it and present it objectively and to give information to, you know, about it that you wouldn't normally be able to get hold of. It was to be the definitive source for information on this particular topic.
Cool.
I mean, it is funny to think that they've been very hands off about this.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also an interesting phenomenon I've seen over the years is Lucasfilm was more, you could almost say, hostile to the Star Wars Holiday Special in the earlier days, you know, like in the early 90s to, you know, even the late 90s. It was something that just wasn't really talked about. There were very, very few mentions of it. And that was on purpose, you know, and there was the infamous quote that went around of George Lucas saying, you know, if I had time and a hammer, I'd smash every copy of the Holiday Special. I'm not sure that he actually said that, I'm sure that he actually said something to that effect. And, you know, it was something that he kind of had to live with. And, I think he got tired of being asked questions about it, because, you know, he was involved in the beginning, but it really, in the end, it wasn't his, you know, thing. Right. It became CBS's thing, and they really had full control over it. And it was something that he kind of regretted giving up control of, and it's also something that I think he vowed he would never do again if he could help it. But yeah, it's gone from something that was sort of taboo early on to gaining more and more acceptance over the years. And I think the website helped with that a little bit, because I don't think I'd be exaggerating to say it was probably the first website to actually, that didn't slam the holiday special, that was approaching it objectively, and not just talking about how terrible it was actually presenting factual information about it, and presenting anything that you might want to know, without falling into the usual traps of it was so terrible and here's the hyperbole about how terrible it was. That was the idea.
Yeah, where you're supposed to not like it because you hear so many other people not liking it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I think this collectively. Oh, yeah. I understand now.
I think people were disliking it preemptively when they hadn't even seen it. They were talking about how terrible it was, and at some point I began to think, well, this has gotten out of hand here, and also it's terribly unoriginal to when I see more and more. Websites would mention it and they would say the same things about it. And YouTube channels too, when YouTube came along, like every time that there was someone did a thing about the holiday special, they would regurgitate the same things that you had seen on every single website talking about it. And I was like, come up with something a little more original than this. Everybody before you has said the same exact thing, say something, about, interesting about it. Say something about, something you actually did like about it. Cause there are some things in there that are likable. Talk about that. And so that was, having a website that actually didn't make fun of it, was a first. And I think that kind of helped, adjust people's perception of it a little bit. It was like, you go to the website and you could see there are some interesting things in this. There are some really great talent involved. There's some really great art involved. And, there's a lot of things in there that are sort of, again, overshadowed by its infamous nature.
Yeah. It almost makes me wonder, since it was so hard to get a hold of and see, how many people really did not like it, or just, like I said, carried that sentiment of, oh, we're not supposed to like it, so here's the standard regurgitation to help me feel like I'm in and I've got cred and all that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who were slamming it and making fun of it, I think a lot of them hadn't even seen it at all, or maybe they'd seen little clips of it or whatever. At the very least, I don't think they'd seen a good copy of it, which was another thing too. When you see a really nice copy of it, it does improve the experience a little bit. Part of what made it so awful was watching it on this like nth generation VHS tape that was washed out and horrible looking, and who wants to sit through that, especially when it's something that's not likable to begin with in a lot of ways. So,
yeah, let's talk briefly about the documentary and how it came to be, how you became involved in it. And most importantly, for our purposes, is it based on a book?
The answer to that, I can say right offhand is no. The book came afterwards, but the book was sort of being done at the same time. So this was really the brainchild of my friend Steve Kozak, who I didn't know at the time, but he showed up on a web forum that I was on and was basically asking for people that had information about the Star Wars Holiday Special. And this was back in 2017, I believe. And I immediately got in touch with him. I was like, oh, I definitely, think I can help you out here.
Yeah.
And he had seen my website. He was familiar with it. So he was, happy to connect on that. And so we started talking quite a lot. And so he had this whole idea in mind of what he wanted to do for this as a documentary. And I had already, I'd thought quite a bit about doing a documentary. I was trying to think about how that would work out and, who I might do it with. Who had the ability to do that, how it would be funded and all these sorts of things, and how I would get a hold of all the people I wanted to get a hold of to be in it. And the thing was that, you know, people had approached me about it before, and there was a couple of people that had attempted to do a documentary, and it either never got off the ground or they did it and it, you know, it was not really usable material in mm-hmm. the end, and so it, you know, maybe got some limited distribution among friends, and that's about it. And so I hadn't really seen anybody who had gone about it the right way. And Steve, when I started talking to Steve, I realized right off the bat that he had absolutely the right idea about it. His idea was not, you know, it was not about making fun of it. Right. It was not about just tearing it apart and dissecting how awful it was. It really was about trying to discover, you know, like how did it come about? What's the behind the scenes story of the, mm-hmm. of the Star Wars Holiday Special? And, but on top of that, I found out that Steve had the connections that were needed for this, because Steve's got, you know, he's got family that, you know, his dad worked for, the Bob Hope show, you know, and, mm. you know, oh, wow. and had access to a lot of the people there, had been in part of Steve's family for, you know, for a long time. He'd had all these connections, in Hollywood and could get hold of people. And then he himself, worked for the Jimmy Kimmel show and had worked for, numerous other things as well. And I was like, wow, this Steve is the guy. This is the guy that you need to do this. He can actually, you know, find these people and actually get them to agree to be in this, to be interviewed for this. And that's fantastic. That is exactly what we need. And, you know, as soon as I figured all that out, I was on board. I was completely on board. Mm. And, so I said, you know, Steve, I will help you out in any way possible. You know, give you any information you need. Assist you in any way. I'm fully on board with this. Mm. And so I remained in contact with Steve, you know, through the whole thing. And Steve partnered with, Jeremy Koons, he was actually the editor for, Napoleon Dynamite. Mm. And so they had some draw there as well. And they were able to secure financing, and, it really started rolling and was looking pretty good. Steve was, interviewing people on camera. And then the pandemic came along. Mm. And kind of put a damper on things, but it didn't stop it completely. And I had been really working with Steve remotely, because Steve was, you know, quite a ways from me. I'm here in Oregon, and Steve was down in Hollywood, or, you know, eventually he moved off to Utah, and so we were doing a lot of remote calls and conference calls and things mm-hmm. like that. But during the pandemic, Steve came up here. And did some filming up here. We planned to meet up here, actually out in Medford, Oregon, mm. Because we had a couple people that happened to be out there that we were going to interview. One of them was a member of Jefferson Starship, and another was a stage manager for the Star Wars Holiday Special. Mm. And then at the same time, Steve was going to interview me for the documentary as well. So we were kind of going to roll that all into one trip. And this was during like kind of peak COVID time, but more mm. like it was at the point where you could actually fly, but there were not very many people flying. And yes. I remember I flew out to Medford on a very empty plane.
I love those days.
it was an interesting time, but yeah, that was the point where we got together and did some filming up here. At one point I went down and met up with Steve, down in LA and did some filming down there. And we mainly just did a lot of correspondence and collaboration, you know, over the phone and through video conferencing and so forth. And that's how we worked. It was going along. There was a lot of progress, and of course it did take a while, and like I said, the pandemic slowed it down quite a bit. Yeah. But eventually there was a workable cut, and mm-hmm. I got to see a couple early cuts of it, and that was pretty great. I could see, you know, it was shaping up really well, and there was some really amazing stuff in there.
Yeah.
There was a lot more material shot than you know, we could really get into the documentary. Mm-hmm. So it was trimmed down quite a bit. And I'm hoping that at some point, you know, maybe those things could be released as, you know, extras on a future physical release, or maybe, you know, through streaming or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But so there is more material than what you see in the documentary. But I think the final cut of the documentary is pretty great. And I think it got down to the core of what,
yeah,
you know, what we were getting at.
When did it actually come out? How long has it been out?
So that was December 2023, okay, as I recall. It came out. It was doing the rounds in theaters, you know, in like art house theaters and things like that, mm-hmm, that would regularly show documentaries and so forth, and playing festivals. Mm. But it actually came out finally December 2023 on physical media, Blu-ray and DVD, and then also on most of the streaming channels. Yeah. So you can watch it, you know, on just about anywhere now.
Yeah, I love the fact it's not even very expensive to rent either. It's, yeah, only, yeah, $3 or $4.
Yeah.
So definitely recommend it to anybody to go and check that out on your streaming platform of choice.
Right. And then to kind of go back to your question earlier about the book, Disturbance in the Forest, which was written by Steve Kozak. This was kind of, he was doing this, sort of working on this along the way, and the book was released to kind of cover all of this other material that couldn't possibly make it into the documentary.
Sure. Yeah.
He really wanted to present it, but you know, there's no way, in some of it, there's no way to put it on film. You know, it was, mm-hmm, just information or whatever. And and so, you know, shortly after the film came out, Steve's book came out, and so it's, you know, it's pretty amazing. It's packed with a lot of stuff,
yeah,
and a lot of things that you don't find out about in the documentary, and in a lot of really fascinating facts.
Okay. Excellent. Good Christmas present, either the movie or the book or both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holiday present.
Life Day present. One of my favorite moments in the theater experience was during the Life Day ceremony. There were folks near the front who had these glowing orbs that they lifted, yep, up.
Light orb. It's right there. Those people.
Life orb.
I admit that was us.
Oh, it was. I did not know that.
Yeah, that was my girlfriend and I holding up our Life Day globes. I thought, you know, we should do this, and maybe it'll become a tradition.
Yeah,
this, yeah. I don't think we'd really done that. I know people had brought Life Day globes, like homemade Life Day globes, to the theater before, but I thought, you know, that's a perfect time to hold up your Life, absolutely, Day globe in, yeah, the theater, and you know, let's try and do this as kind of one of those sort of Rocky Horror Picture Show,
yeah, yeah,
participation, yeah, moments.
I got to maybe get one for my nephew and tell him to bring it next year.
Yeah, yeah.
We've also had people bring in, and the theater has had like Wookiee cookies, mm-hmm, and I think that, you know, during that scene, maybe people could pull out their Wookiee cookies and start, you know, hold, yes, them up or something, and, right, start eating.
Yes.
And we'll have to come up with a whole, you know, series of things that, that'd people, awesome, can participate in. I think, yep, it would make it more fun.
Yep. I'm going to bring my gigantic whisk.
Yes, that too. That's perfect. That was one of the few scenes that I really remembered, having seen it as a child.
Yeah.
There was not a lot that I remembered. It was more like just general kind of what happened. But I definitely remembered the four-armed chef scene. My brother and I laughed about that quite a bit afterwards.
It makes me wonder if Dexter from Attack of the Clones was a reference back to that, because it's a four-armed diner,
yeah,
guy, right?
Well, there's a lot of echoes in things that came later that, mm-hmm, that really, you have to wonder, if they were a direct descendant of the holiday special, and I'm sure that they were in a lot of cases. Another one that that doesn't really get brought up is there in the prequels. There is a scene where Anakin Skywalker and Palpatine sit down, and they watch. They sit down and they're talking together, and they're watching a water opera,
yeah, yeah,
and it's like this. Right. Giant, like, sort of globe of water, and you see these creatures like doing like this, you know, like acrobatic kind of water swimming sequence through the globe of water. Think about that and the scene that opens the Diane Carroll scene. Diane Carroll is Mermia. She's a water creature.
Okay.
But in the beginning of that scene, there's a whole kind of effect-driven shot where there's a bunch of these creatures. They're swimming around in kind of this roughly circular-looking sort of formation. And of course, the effects are not great at the time. So it's you can see what they're kind of trying to show. Yeah. But I think that is actually, what came later with Anakin and Palpatine sitting there watching this water opera. I think that was a direct descendant of the Star Wars Holiday Special. I think that was the idea that they were trying to pull off in the Holiday Special that later wound up being in the prequels.
So the Holiday Special leads you towards the dark side.
I'm in trouble if that's the case.
Yeah. I haven't looked back at my notes just because you were segueing into stuff without me having to prompt you. So appreciated that. I think I'm about wrapped.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. I had reached out and I thought, you know what? It'd be fun to talk about this for Christmas, for Life Day, for the holidays. And
The season is right.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people want to find you, obviously StarWarsHolidaySpecial.com.
Mm-hmm.
And is there information about the documentary and the book as well there?
There are. If you look in the news section of StarWarsHolidaySpecial.com, there's mentions of it that have links to, where you can go to purchase that and see it online and so forth. And they're pretty easy to find too. If you just do a search, you're going to be able to easily find where it's streaming, where you can purchase it as physical media and so forth. So
awesome. I think we're wrapped.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again, Scott.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Ciao.
The Muppet Show. They're doing it's either a 50th anniversary special or a backdoor pilot for a revitalization of it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's variety show, which is all, centered around one star. Many of the Star Wars characters had been on the Muppet Show back in the day, in the 70s and early 80s. So, variety shows are not completely dead.
No, someone dusts them off every now and then. Like Kelly Clarkson, I think, did one a couple of years ago at Christmas time. I remember Barry Manilow did one in the early 2000s. someone will dust them off for one day. Or Jessica Simpson and Nick Lachey did one at some point when they were, when they had their reality show as well. So,
I think that if you do a variety show like as a spoof. Because that's why the Muppets have been so great for so long, because it's a total spoof of variety shows and we love it. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. It makes fun of all the aspects of running a variety show and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's probably the way you could make one now. You do a kind of a Spinal Tap sort of variety show. And I think you would have an audience for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You start with the Cantina Band and they're looking for a gig and they're like,
there you go.
It's not enough for us. We have to have other acts that come in.
Yeah.
And then there ought to be some other thing which puts it into the timeline in the right place. Yeah. And so they're interviewing people and
Revenge of the Bith. isn't that their race?
Yeah.
That is something that's kind of great now. Disney has been really branching out and trying different things with Star Wars, and not all of it is to everyone's taste. It has finally reached the point now where things have gone so far out there now that there's things that I'm just not interested in seeing. But I applaud them being there. It's like, okay, this is not for me. This is for a different audience. But I love that it's there, and I agree with them trying this out.
Yeah.
And I think doing more Star Wars humor based stuff would be, like the Holiday Special was. It was more unintentionally funny than it was actually funny.
Yeah.
There were things in it that were meant to be funny that were not very
didn't
funny.
Quite land,
didn't quite land, or don't land today.
Yeah.
And but I think if you intentionally did, I don't think we've
don't
had
take it too
yet.
Seriously.
Yeah. There was a show. It got canceled. It was when the transition happened between George Lucas. His Lucasfilm and then Disney's Lucasfilm. During that transition, there was a show that got lost that was going to be a comedy show. I think Seth Green was involved in it.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I think it would have been the first like outright, you know, Star Wars comedy thing that was official like that. Mm. And, you know, and unfortunately that kind of got lost in the shuffle. And they really haven't done, you know, there's things that kind of fit in that category. Like the Lego Star Wars stuff is definitely, that's comedy.
Yes.
And so forth. And there've been some cartoon things that have had comedic elements and mm-hmm. so forth. But, to do a live action Star Wars thing that's fully comedy based, I think that's something that maybe could happen in terms of another holiday special type thing. Yeah. You know, let's do a holiday special that's intentionally funny, you know, mm-hmm. that where, you know, like we were saying, a spoof of a comedy variety show, but they, you know, but it's more like a Spinal Tap kind of thing, and do a mockumentary mm-hmm. of an attempt to do a comedy variety show. And, yeah. and, you know, maybe I feel like that could work, you know, who knows? Disney, if you're listening, there's an opportunity here.
Sure.
And if they want to find you, it's StarWarsHolidaySpecial.com.
Exactly. Yeah. I can easily be found out there.
Excellent.